Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Fantrax Toolshed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From Dynasty to Prospects to Redraft, we got you covered. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clay.
All right, fantasy baseball fanatics around the world, welcome to the Toolshed. This is episode 162 of the Fantrax Toolshed with Clayton Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have a very, very fun episode. I know I say that every week, but this is an especially fun episode as we will be recapping. This is one of at least two, maybe even three episodes recapping our recently concluded Toolshed Prospect Industry mock draft. That was a lot of fun with me, Chris, 12 other of the sharpest prospect minds in the industry. And we have three guests on tonight, not at the same time, but we'll bring on one after the other. It's going to be a really fun show. But first, let's bring in my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, what's going on, man?
Not much. It was fun. It's certainly feels like mock draft season in Welsh's P180P mocks right now. We wrapped up the Toolshed mock, done some other Dynasty mocks and all that fun stuff. So I just want to draft now. Like, I'm just have the itch to be in a draft like 24/7. And so, at least this, I don't love mocks, but like for prospect stuff, I think it's helpful, like for content, but like, especially like redraft, like I don't want to mock for redraft. Let's just do a best ball and just do the thing. But, I think we're slowly picking back up more people from football. Baseball's getting in more full swing. And I think, especially like January 1, when the year, you know, turns over, everybody's kind of back. Then after the Super Bowl, everybody's back. So
yep.
We're getting more and more people into the baseball world. So it's fun.
Yeah, I think it comes in waves, right? Like you get, I think December, right around this time, early December, you know, maybe your fantasy football team is, you know, not doing so hot. It's like, all right, let me start thinking about baseball. And then January 1, you're like, all right, well, it's 2023 and football is over. At least fantasy football is over. You get that next wave and then Super Bowl, you get that next wave. So yeah, definitely ramping up baseball here. It's always a fun time of year. I always try to like, oh, I'm going to wait to do drafts. Then I just never do because I, you know, love drafting and mock drafting and everything. So, and this has always been one of my favorite exercises to do every year. Obviously, A lot of these people were in our mock draft we did last year. So we had several kind of similar people, but we brought in some new people here, some fresh faces, a lot of great names in this industry. So we try to get some new faces in every year. This was a lot of fun, and we'll get right into that. But first, let's get the usual housekeeping out of the way here. You can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. And our show's at Fantrax Toolshed. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Check out our Patreon for extra content from both Chris and I, and our YouTube channel for plenty of video throughout the offseason and into 2023. And of course, check out all the other great stuff that Fantrax and Fantrax HQ have to offer. 2023 best ball leagues are already open, and we have plenty of great content on HQ for whatever fantasy sports you're into. All right, let's welcome on our first guest to discuss this mock draft that we all took part in. He is the head of MLB info at Underdog Fantasy, Mr. Brendan Tuma. You can find him on Twitter at Too Much Tuma. Brendan, how you doing, man?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for coming on. And like I said, it's been a very fun mock draft. A lot of sharp minds in that, and you're our first guest on this recap episode here. So let's hop right into it. So you picked out of you had the one pick. That's right. So we'll recap Brendan's picks here. This was again 20 teams, or actually be 20 rounds, 14 teams. Tuma out of the one spot here. Went Gunnar Henderson, Marcelo Mayer, Hunter Brown, Cam Collier, Rafaela was at the round five, then Jordan Westberg, Miguel Blaez, Nick Gonzalez, Carson Williams, Kyle Stowers in round 10, Nico Cavadas, a lot of Red Sox here, I like it, Ryan Pepio, AJ Smith-Shaver, Austin Martin, Yainer Diaz in the 15th, and then last five, Leover Paguero, Moises Gomez, Evan Fert, Emmanuel Valdez, and Mikey Romero. Two more Red Sox to close it out, so very Red Sox heavy. I like that. But right at the top, Gunnar, obviously it's almost a toss-up here. Gunnar, Corbin Carroll. What played into you taking Gunnar over Carroll there?
Yeah, so having the 101 is obviously a lot of fun in a draft like this. To me, it's a clear top two. It's Gunnar and Carroll. Those were the two that I consider. And I did get the question on Twitter, you know, what made you decide Gunnar over Carroll? And I thought about it, and really, I could wake up tomorrow, and if we did this draft over and I had the 101 again, I could, you know, be in a mood where I say I kind of feel like I'm taking Corbin Carroll this time. For me, Gunnar is just a little bit more of like my guy. And I feel when we're doing some of these mock drafts that we all like to, you know, develop our identities with some of these players. I felt I was a little bit early on Gunnar this season in a way where I wasn't with Carroll. But man, the more I think about it with these new rule changes coming next year, I do think that there's a non-zero chance the stolen bases, if we see the fastest players in MLB get a huge edge in terms of stolen bases, then Carroll could go nuts in that sense. But Gunnar, the hit tool, the power, we've seen him have success in MLB already. You know, those two, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what the rule changes end up doing, just from the standpoint of, like, does it give the fastest players that edge, like to boost, like it's a 30 steal guy become 50? Or is it more of a 10 steal guy becomes a 15, a 20 steal guy? So yeah, we just have so many questions about this. But I do think Gunner's going to run some. Gunner's pretty interesting. And so I think he could, you know, steal a few more bases than we expect. And plus, I'd bank on his power over Carroll's. And I think his hit tool is a little bit underrated. So I think you're going to get a really solid year from him. And I like both. Like you said, they're both probably a tier than their own. Yep. 1 and 2. And then after that, it's like 3 to 9 for me as a tier. Like, you can go any direction you want with those, as far as prospect ranking. So
yeah, it's almost like nitpicking between Carroll and Gunnar. There's no wrong choice. Yeah, it's, and that's like that huge cluster where I've seen 3 through 8 or 9 ranked like every possible combination and order you can imagine. So yeah, these two are going to be. I might say that Carroll has a smidge more, you know, pure ceiling than Gunnar, but I also would say, you know, I'd give this slight edge to Gunnar on floor too. So it's like, again, you can't go wrong with either one. I think they both be very good for a very long time.
Gunnar had a homer at Fenway last September that I'm still shocked. I have to pull up the clip or highlight and tweet it to you guys to make sure you can see it. But he goes dead center at Fenway, and the crowd's reaction, it was legitimately crushed. Like, his power can really play.
I think I remember that. Yeah, I think I remember that.
It was September for the Red Sox, so not a lot of people were watching, but
yeah, not surprising.
Chris, I was just listening to you on Elsh's, our good friend, the Welsh, his show, Prospect One, mm-hmm. you know, talking about these proximity prospects, how they kind of get bumped up draft boards in these mock that we're doing. Gunnar and Carroll are so interesting because they're not just close to the majors. We've already seen them in the majors and we've already seen them have success. And when you add that on top of being blue chip prospects in general, it's they're kind of just like no-brainers at the top.
Yeah, 100% agree. Because one, the debut aspect where we know they're going to be up, like there's, it's not even a worry about proximity because we know they're going to be on the roster opening day, plus the talent level. So it's just like they're almost head and shoulders above the rest of the pack, I think. So was that a approach of yours? Because, you know, your third round pick, Hunter Brown's another player that fits that. Did you have a general strategy coming into the mock? Was it to go with some proximity guys, or talk to us a little bit about what your strategy was?
Yeah, I feel like for me in these prospect mock drafts, again, we're doing the Welshers as well right now, the P1 ADP mock. So I typically try to always go hitter heavy, which a lot of us do. And particularly like hit tool, I definitely have a bias towards, you know, 60 or higher hit tool grade players who don't strike out a lot. I shy away a bit from the big power but high strikeout rate type bats. And I just try to get as many of those as possible. I definitely look at it as a bit of building a team with these prospect drafts. This was going to be a dynasty roster that I was going to be leading. So I do want a little bit of balance in there. I want some safe bats, some upside bats, mix in some arms, but I kind of feel like that's the way I approach it. I was shocked actually to get, I consider Marcelo Mayer like the epitome of this safe hit tool, should have upside if, you know, the body matures more as he gets closer to the majors. So start with Gunnar and Mayer, I was ecstatic about. And then Hunter Brown for me is just a bet on the organization as a whole. I mean, can you go wrong with the Nationals pitcher right now?
Not really. And we've talked about that too. And I think Hunter Brown, when you look at just like the recent Astros that come up for on the pitching side, like Javier and Luis Garcia and Framber and all them, they were all, you know, solid prospects, but none of them were really considered like, you know, the high value blue chip guys. And Brown's probably has the highest prospect pedigree at the, you know, comparative points in time of their career. So, and to see what they've done, obviously we all know what they've done with pitching development. They maximize it better than almost anybody out there. So, yeah, I love Brown. I want to see him trim that walk rate just a little bit. But at the same time, like I say, Chris and I have talked about him a couple times in recent episodes. Like the upside is there. He needs the innings. Kind of maybe he's in that Javier role this year where he still gets like 120, 130 innings and he'll have a ton of value. So, yeah, I love Brown. I was hoping to get him in this draft. I wasn't sure where he would go. But, yeah, I love how you started. Like, I like, you know, a lot of the guys you got are, were, you know, got personal favorites of mine. I love Rafaela. Cam Collier obviously has a lot of upside there too. And I just tweeted about Jordan Westbrook the other day. I think he's pretty underrated too. So I think you had a nice mix of like the upside guys with some proximity too, and then some like the kind of like the buy low types with like, you know, Nick Gonzalez and guys like that. So yeah, I really liked how your draft went. You know, if you had to pick one of your picks, like what was your favorite pick of your draft?
Yeah, so I get my favorite one, I guess it's Mayer. For him to fall to 28, that's the answer. I'll use this as an opportunity though to pick your guy's brain on Nick Gonzalez. I think that this time last year, these two second basemen, Nick York and Nick Gonzalez, we saw them going in the top two rounds of drafts like these. And I got Nick Gonzalez. It might have been like pick 115. I'd have to do the math on that, but it was the end of the eighth round.
Yeah, so I think that's 99.
Yeah, and 112.
Yeah. 112. Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah, end of the eighth, or not the beginning. Yeah, 112.
Yeah, Nick York went two rounds before that, and I'm looking at the draft, and Connor Norby went in the late second. And to me, Connor Norby is kind of like this year's Nick Gonzalez, Nick York. He's done it at a higher level, so I think that's kind of the mistake we made on Gonzalez and York last year was, yeah, they look great, and we thought the hit tools were going to be really safe, but it was at such a low level of the minors. So, yeah, I'm kind of curious, like, your guys' brain on that, like, to get someone who was going, you know, top 20 overall last year to fall that much, regardless of what you even think of the bat. There wasn't any like long-term injury concern to go off that. I don't love the organization. They didn't have the best year, but I just thought it was like a value at that point. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. And I think there's some issues with Gonzalez, and, you know, his issue to hit high fastballs, a little bit too much swing and miss overall, but I think that was great value. I still think he's a back end. I think I have him in the 80s or something in my rankings right now. I'd have to look, but I still think he's a top 100 guy. And I think that was a solid value. And yeah, maybe the average isn't quite as high as maybe we once expected it to be, but I still think he can hit like 250, 260 with, you know, he's got solid power, you know, a little bit of speed as well. Maybe he's like a 2010 ish type of guy. And I think that'll be fine from second base. So I do think maybe we did push him up, you know, collectively as an industry a bit too high at this point last year, but I do think he's a good value right now at that spot for sure.
Yeah. I've seen him three separate times in three different stints, like week-long stints. I saw him last summer in high A when he was here in Greenville, and then last year's AFL, this year's AFL, saw him live. And the high fastball thing's been an issue. I got a lot of pushback last summer. I put a video out, and he couldn't hit like multiple times, struck out 95 up in the zone. And I got a lot of pushback. People were like, no, that's not who he is. And then it's funny because he took off after that. Like, after that series is when he finished the year like insane. And I was like, okay, maybe it was just a, you know, I saw a couple bad games type thing. And then we've kept kind of seeing that. So it's concerning for somebody that came into the draft like as like the best hit tool guy in the class, I think. But there are still tools there, I think, in general. And I hope that he'll figure it out. Like, this is always been a high contact guy. So if it all comes back around, like, then 112 does look like a really good spot, because like you said, he was a top 20 guy. So there could easily be a big return on investment. So I think the jury's still out, and I think 2023 will be a really big year for him.
Yeah. Agreed.
So moving forward, was there any pick that you would do over? Like, if you had the chance to like take one back, which one would it be?
Yeah. So in terms of what I was referring to before, of kind of getting, you know, your guy, or you really want to get our guys, Eric, it was actually the first time I met you in Portland in a Sea Dogs game. And Rafaela had just gotten called up recently. And I'm going to be honest, I don't know what Rafaela is going to be long term, but he is just a bottle of energy. You know, he at that game, he hit a homer, and the way he rounds third base, like, he's hyping up the crowd. He had just gone to Portland.
Yeah,
I was blown away by his energy and his enthusiasm. I mean, he plays Gold Glove defense already. He just moved to the outfield. So I'm not positive it's all going to work out offensively for him, because that's definitely the part of his game that he really needs to, you know, hone in on. But there's just so much athleticism there. There's such a joy for the game. I am a Red Sox fan, so there's probably a little bit of bias in there. But I think I reached on him a little bit early, just in terms of like what I was talking about before. Like, to bear him at the 4-5 turn, I took him and Cam Collier. And Cam Collier, we haven't seen a lot of him yet, but he's someone, you know, who, similar to what you're describing, Nick Gonzalez, coming through the draft, is a good hit tool guy. And Rafael isn't exactly that, but I don't know. I kind of want to see what he becomes. He's not someone I want to get carried away with right now, but he also hasn't been getting a huge, huge bump in early prospect rankings this offseason.
Yeah, and he wouldn't have made it back to you. Like, I think if you wanted him, you had to take that pick knowing you weren't picking again until 84. So there was no way he was falling there. So you got your guy. And, you know, I was fortunate. I know y'all saw him. I was fortunate to see him at the beginning of the year before he got called up to Double A's here in Greenville. He's got such a high floor to make the majors because his glove's so good. He's plus at shortstop. He's plus in center field. He has a cannon for an arm. I'm not sure if you've gotten to see that, but like, there was a play when they were playing Hudson Valley. I think Everson Pereira hit one, and Trey Sweeney was trying to go from first to third, and it was in the gap. Rafaela just hosed him by like seven steps, like to third. It was the best throw I've ever seen in the minors. It was absolutely insane. So yeah, he's a really fun name. There's some chase there, but at the end of the day, like, the bat's intriguing. The glove's really, really good. So I like the pick.
Yeah, Rafael is great defensively. And then what you saw, Tuma, with that energy, like, that wasn't just like one game. Like, he was like that the entire time he was here. I probably saw him, I don't know, 20, 25 times or whatever it was, second half of the season. But yeah, defensively, so good. I love the arm. The range is phenomenal. Best throw I've, while we're on that subject, not to get on a tangent, but best throw I ever saw was also it was Josh Reddick, former Red Sox prospect, played with Oakland, probably several other teams in his career. He was playing right field at the time, and a deep fly ball. He was at least one or two steps onto the warning track and right. runner at third, tagged up, and he just threw an absolute missile, no hops, missile right to the catcher and got him by a good step. I was like, sitting there, I'm like, oh, holy crap, that was insane. But yeah, I like Rafaela a good amount. I probably have him a bit higher in my rankings than most. But yeah, I think if you wanted to get him, obviously that's the issue, right? Being on the turn where it's like you have that big gap between picks. I'm on the turn, the back end of the turn, the other side, and the P1 ADP mock that Welsh puts on.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Right now. And I got to start paying him off to put me higher in the... I don't know if he does a randomized. I'm always like one of the last three picks. Every year he's done this. I got to slip him a 20 or something. But yeah, definitely to get your guy, you had to do that there. And I like that value. I think it's pretty solid value. Like I said, I like a lot of the picks you made here. But let's talk about some other picks outside of your own. Was there any other pick, maybe we call it steal of the draft, like where one pick that somebody else made, but you're like, damn, that was a great value right there?
Yeah, definitely. So when I started my off-season prospect process, where we all finally just get a chance to sit down and not have more box scores come in every single night, I made this little thing. I made my all prospect team. So I made a batting order of, you know, players who, if they were a top prospect, I gave them, you know, more of a chance to make the team, but it was also production based. So if someone had a bad year, they weren't going to make the team. And anyways, when I filled out the starting rotation, Gavin Stone, just based on production, I had to be honest, I wasn't super familiar with him before going through this process, but based on production, he had a truly insane year. Again, similar to Hunter Brown, this is a bet on an organization. You know, I know the command isn't exactly what you want, but if there is a team that's going to figure it out, the Dodgers are on the short list of ones that I would trust. And I think that they've kind of, Ryan Pepiot came up this year. Obviously, the command with him was just like not there at all. I don't want to say that that's exactly what Gavin Stone's going to be, but the stuff looks outrageous. I'd love to get, you know, some sort of stuff plus number on him from, you know, Saris or anyone else who has a pitching model like that, because I think it could be pretty good. And I think some of these guys, when you bet on that truly electric stuff, like DL Hall or another, is you kind of have this floor of, depending on the type of league you're in. I'm playing a lot of head-to-head leagues where even like multi-inning relievers have value. So if that's what Gavin Stone ended up being, like, that would be cool with me in those sort of leagues. But yeah, Gavin Stone's production this year, plus the fact that he's on the Dodgers, I definitely weigh that pretty heavily with the organizations that some of these guys are on.
Yeah, for sure. And Stone went in the sixth round to Aram Layton. So that would have been pick 75. So yeah, pretty solid value. I love him and Bobby Miller. I think they'd be pretty damn good duo. And Bobby Miller went two picks later to Jesse Roche. So yeah, I've seen those guys flip-flopped, and I think there's almost nitpicking between the two right now. So yeah, Stone's obviously huge riser. He's in the Dodgers org. You got to love that. And, you know, they've really are one of the better player development orgs in baseball, especially with pitchers too. So yeah, I thought that was a pretty... I was going to maybe get him if he went back to... made it back around to me, which I knew he probably wouldn't, but that was my hope. But that's going to wrap up this segment with Tuma. Tuma, thanks for coming on. I'll give you a quick second here to plug everything you guys got going on over at Underdog.
Oh, yeah. If you guys are into, you know, baseball games, best ball we're going to have starting up soon. And then during the season, we have our Pick'em contest. We have, you know, a lot of player prop, similar games like that to use during the season. And yeah, I'm on Twitter at Too Much Tuma. And yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, of course, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for coming on. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Come back with our next guest, which will be Drew Wheeler. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Now we bring on our next guest here. He is the bearded wonder, one, the only, Mr. Drew Wheeler. You can find him on Twitter at Drew is okay, and he writes over at Prospects Live. Drew, how you doing, man?
Is it a cliche to say I'm doing okay?
You are. I mean, hey, you got to look to the handle, right? Or the hashtag that I gave you, hashtag do the Drew.
Yeah, you know, I would say I'm doing the Drew, and the Drew is doing okay. It's been a busy day, but I'm always glad to talk to two of my buddies, Eric, you, and Chris, you. Good to see you guys. Good to chat with you about this hellacious mock that we did recently.
Yeah, no, it's always good to chat with you too, man. And yeah, this was, like we were talking before with Tuma, this was a very fun draft. Obviously, a lot of sharp minds. And here we go from Tuma, who had the number one pick, to Drew, who was right in the middle of the round at pick, what was that, seven?
Seven.
Okay, so we're basically right in the middle of the round. Drew started out with first five picks for him. He went very catcher heavy in this draft. How many catches did he take overall? Five, I think, or something like that?
I think I ended up at five.
Okay, so starting the draft from the seven pick, he went Kyle Manzardo, then Francisco Alvarez, Logan Ohapi, Masataka Yoshida, and Emmanuel Rodriguez, 6-10. Ken Waldichuk, Henry Davis, D.L. Hall, Blaze Jordan, and Edgar Cuero, 11-15, Gordon Graceffo, Kumar Rocker, Brian Wu, Emerson Hancock, Reese Olson, 16-20, Andre Shaparo, Ivan Melendez, Kiner Delgado, Andre Silvera, and Simeon Woods Richardson to round it out. So again, a lot of catchers there. What was just in general, obviously we knew it was going to be a very stout, you know, draft here with all these sharp minds. What was your general strategy going into this draft?
It was this draft particularly, I think that my strategy was probably let's be splashy. And really the pick that I think best emphasizes that is Kyle Manzardo at seven. You know, he's a player that I think, especially in the industry, we're kind of acknowledging is very, very talented, but I don't think we're quite at the level of saying Kyle Manzardo at seven. That said, the contact is unreal. The power has been very present, probably more so than I guess I expected. And to the point that he's somebody that I wanted to plant a flag on. And so in, you know, I think I did that pretty well with seven. That seemed to be, be a topic of discussion, you know, after the fact and on Twitter, you know, Manzardo at seven, that was kind of a big thing. In drafts, normally I try to kind of supplement a win now. I generally am running a win now operation. So I want to have prospects in a cyclical nature. And what I mean by that is kind of burying ETAs to supplement the drafting and trading that I would be doing to keep winning, or hopefully keep winning. I should say, I don't want to sound arrogant, but you know, round two, and you alluded to it, the first five rounds, you know, Francisco Alvarez was just sitting there. And, you know, my ideal world would have been to go Manzardo and then hit one of G-Rod, Painter, or Yuri Perez, but they all went. Alvarez is still sitting there. And I just think that was too far of a slide. And especially in a room that I would consider, what did you say a minute ago? It was a room full of very talented people. Well, as sharp people. I think I told maybe my brother or someone, I was like, you know, man, this is a room full of very sharp people. And I'm also in there. So I wanted to make plays that I could be proud of. And Alvarez was one of those. I was really, really stoked to get him. Logan Ohapi, who I had at number 20 in my September rankings for Prospects Live. Overall, that's Prospects, just by the way. You guys can ooh and ah in your leisure time at home. He was still chilling in third round, so I took him as well. And then, you know, I think at that point, my draft shifted almost to vultuous. You take what's left. You take the pickings there on top, because if other people are reaching and pulling, there's cream at the top that you could scoop up and throw in your cup. And so I had a very creamy drink eventually. At a certain point, I just kind of melded all these things together because I wanted to take my guys. I wanted to plant flags. I wanted to be opportunistic, but smart. And so, you know, another pick I'll throw out real quick is one that I'm sure is dear to your heart at this point, Eric, is Masataka Yoshida.
yep.
Jesse, of course, had to ruin my strategy in the group chat and just, hey, can we pick NPP guys? Well, way to go, man. So it was kind of the Drew just coming in, just dropping the mic with, you know, Yoshida before Senga even. But, you know, Welsh took Senga a couple picks before, but I loved Yoshida. I was really pleased with my draft. Like, hearing you call it back to the even, I was just, you know, I was like, man, this is a crew I would be really, really proud to say that I had.
So. Yeah, and like you said, you had a lot of, you know, win now pieces. And you look at just like, I think it was what, 7 of your first 8 picks are guys that could, well, will be up or could, like, will probably, could see and Zardo second half. Alvarez and Hoppy obviously will be up. Yoshida will be up. Rodriguez is the one that won't, but the Walter Trek will be up. Henry Davis could be up second half, and DL Hall should be up in what role? Who knows? But yeah, a lot of good win now pieces right off the bat for you. So I like that a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, people may think Manzardo's too high at 7, but, you know, I think after Gunner and Carroll, it's a pretty big tier of guys. And Manzardo has done all the right things to push himself. I have him 10th personally. So it's a fine range because I think you're looking at I know he's a first base only type, but look at the value that someone like Freddie Freeman brings who has that elite hit tool. Very similar to Manzardo. I think Manzardo is a 70 grade hitter. His zone contact rate was near 90% this year in the minors. Absolutely smokes line drives, can get to that home run power easy. I saw him a couple games live this year and just that easy, easy power, even to the oppo field. You love to see that. The plate discipline's elite. I mean, he walked 59 times, struck out 65. So a near 1-to-1 ratio is insane. And I think the power is just a bit underrated when we look at him. I think he's got easy, you know, 25 home run pop in the bat. So, you know, that's a great start, in my opinion. Across the board, I think you got some good values. Particularly love the Emmanuel Rodriguez pick. I've been saying, I think if he didn't get hurt, I think he's a top 25 prospect pretty easily across the board. Just the numbers on him were as good as the numbers are on Manzardo. I mean, Rodriguez's EVs are just through the roof, man. Just his 90th percentile EV was like 106.6, which is just nuts. Like, and then the plate discipline too. And people make point to strikeouts with him, but it's like, okay, he works deep into counts. Like, you look at it, I mean, he struck out 20%, 25% of the time, but he also walked 20+% of the time. So I love Emmanuel Rodriguez. Across the board, there was a lot of good picks, particularly down at the bottom. I think there's some guys to really bank on that could take off. So overall, really like what you did there. Was there a favorite pick you made? I think you may have referenced a couple of them, but was there one particular one that you really loved more than the
other? Well, first, before we get to that, you know, you guys make me, man, I love guesting on pods. Man, you guys had all the stats. Y'all had it all together. And I just sit here and smile. And y'all do all the work. I love it. You know, and I love that you comped Manzardo to Freddie Freeman because Dylan White, who is a genius, yes. You guys at home are not listening, follow Dylan White at @_arrival on Twitter. He's a genius.
Very smart.
And Bill and Drew sent you. He actually comped him to Paul Goldschmidt on one of our pods for Prospect Live. And I, at that point, I just, you could see money signs in my eyes and I just went nuts. So anyway, a favorite pick. I looked through the roster here and I really love two particularly. And I'll call them both out because I can't pick a favorite child.
Yeah, that's good.
I have to pick a catcher. So Edgar Caro at 134 felt criminal, and especially in a room that sharp, I felt on top of the world. And Brian Woot, who I've been kind of championing all year, and then especially after performance that I think I said was the best pitching performance of the AFL at 175. Woo feels like a guy that's going to shoot up boards this year. And I mean, that same thing could be said for Edgar Caro. He's obviously a catcher, so I'm all in on him just by virtue of his position. But, you know, I think both of those guys are picks that, if I could steal a term from Fangraphs, picks to click in the next year. I think that it's just guys that you can take and then either watch their stock rise and you benefit, or you flip them as their ascent occurs and as their stock grows.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think one of my two favorite picks, I like the Aquero pick as well. That was a great pick. And to go back to it, I love the Emmanuel Rodriguez pick. I was targeting him later in that 5th round. I picked like, what, 6 picks behind you. Ended up taking Edward Julian at that spot. But yeah, I had him right top of my queue. I was hoping he'd fall because he was going to be a 4th round target of mine until like a lot of other guys that I have ranked higher fell there. So I had to take them, obviously. But yeah, Rodriguez, and I even said that in one of my articles too, like, and then what Chris was saying, but how he would be ranked so much higher right now if he hadn't missed half the season. So yeah, I love the Rodriguez pick and Quero as well, because I love Quero. And I said this in my catcher rankings article, that is catcher prospect rankings article that just dropped Wednesday on Fantex HQ, that I wanted to rank him higher. among catchers, but there's just so many good catchers right now, I couldn't. So, but yeah, he's definitely one where a lot of these guys are going to graduate, the Alvarezes, the Ohapi, so on and so forth. He's going to be like that guy that's going to be like, boom, he's in tier one, you know, middle of next year. Yeah, I love Quirrell a lot too.
Drew, before we move on, I do want to ask you about your thoughts on Yoshida. Obviously, we do have news tonight that he signed with the Red Sox, and you've seemed to be one of the higher ones on him. You said you'd take him over Senga, correct?
Yeah.
So what is your expectation like coming over next year?
I think, how high do I want to shoot here? Okay, top level expectation. I'm going to say that he hits 25 home runs with a 290 average, leading off for the Red Sox, has more, I'm going to say more runs than RBI, of course, if he's leading off. But he's not going to not have RBIs. I think if the Red Sox can get 18 home runs, a 270 average, 140 combined runs in RBI, you've made a steal. It's a world class, and I've said this, Chris, in our draft lobby today. I've said it in a tweet today, and I'll say it on a podcast today. I guess that's the spectrum. It's a world class contact tool, plate discipline, not a zero power. I think if I had to put a scale on it, I'd say probably 50 or 55 maybe. He's a world-class contact guy. I don't remember where I read it, but people were comping him, like, said he was the Tony Gwynn of Japan. And I'm not going to say that. I'm not saying he's Tony Gwynn. Jesse, and I can't quit talking about Jesse today. He said that his comp for him was Dustin Pedroia, and I don't hate that. That's pretty fair.
Interesting.
Yeah, I see a little bit of Alex Verdugo. I think there's the contact skills with it, but I could say Yoshida has a little more power than
yeah, Chiro, I agree. But
the contact skills are similar. Roster Resources project him to lead off, which I absolutely love.
Oh, we need him. We didn't really have, like, Verdugo's not a leadoff guy, and we didn't really have. I think they were hoping it would be Jaron Duran, but obviously that's not coming to fruition anytime soon. So yeah, getting a leadoff guy was absolutely crucial, and especially an outfielder too. So they kind of killed two birds with one stone with this signing, so to speak. And yeah, I'm expecting a good, you know, a pretty good OBP. And yeah, a good amount of runs scored as well. Especially, hopefully, fingers crossed that they bring back Xander, maybe bring in another bat, where like the guys behind him could be like Verdugo, Devers, Xander, and Story. That's a pretty good quartet there to drive you in.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I think you could be a very sneaky good kind of value for Yoshida there.
Every team can't sign Trey Turner, can they, Eric?
No, dude. Not to get on a tangent, but that Philly lineup is going to be absolutely ridiculous.
Say it one more time, baby. Say it one more
time. Oh, my word. That is... Wait.
Chris, anything to say about that, buddy?
Ooh, shots fired.
I'll remain quiet.
Annalise is going to be just a dagger fight. It's going to be awful.
Yeah, it's going to be insane.
That is a very fun division.
The Braves just traded Justin Henry Malloy, which hurts me.
Really?
They got Joe Jimenez, which, like... I love Justin Henry Malloy. That's really painful to.
Oh, I didn't see that. That must have been during Survivor.
It literally just happened right now. Like,
oh, Chris, I'm sorry.
That first.
I really like Henry Malloy. So
that's a thing that happened today. Okay.
Yeah.
I've already had two people tweet at me about it. And then someone was like, hey, wasn't Malloy your top Braves dynasty prospect? Yeah. Yes, he was. There's a little bit of a down, you know, not a lot of huge talent, but they've just because they graduated them all to the major leagues. That's what happens. And they won a World Series. You'll take that. But yeah, he was the number one guy and, you know, very underrated too. So good get for Detroit there. I like that a lot. I don't know what your Braves are doing there. Joe, really? Do you like that, Chris?
No, I hate it. Why? I mean, how much is left on his con? Like, I feel like he's been there forever. So how much?
Gotta be 7 or 8 more years, right, Chris?
For Jimenez?
This is Joe Jimenez. This is an anchor piece of the bullpen, baby.
Right. Hold on. I'm pulling it up right now.
He's a one-year rental? Or
yeah, he's a free agent after this upcoming year.
What a banger.
It's the cheap way out instead of signing a reliever. The reliever market is pretty expensive.
Insane.
So I understand that. And he's dirt cheap, but still, it's like, I guess this is a cost of business. Like, looking at some of the values that pitchers have gotten, like,
oh yeah,
just nuts to see like Taijuan Walker get 80 mil. Like,
yeah, that was kind of wild. I'm not mad at that signing, but I did second guess, what was it, 4 years, 80 mil?
Yeah,
something in that range.
That one made me, you know, I had to do a double take. Like, that was a bit much.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But yeah, that's in the reliever market this year, obviously. I think the Jansen thing with Red Sox was, yeah, it was a bit much, but I was like, hey, that's kind of where the market value is at right now. So I don't hate it. I didn't love the value. I like getting him in because we didn't really have a closer, but yeah, not to get on a closer tangent here, but
all right, sorry. Breaking news.
Yeah, no, we had to go breaking news, but there. Joe Jimenez there. And that's a wow. But yeah, back to the mock talk here. So we talked about some of your favorite picks. So let's go to the other end of it here. And, you know, after seeing how the draft unfolded, was there a pick that you might take back, or maybe I could have waited a few rounds on that guy, or any picks that you might regret or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we talked about Manzardo and how I think that people, you know, even myself, I second guessed it for a minute. You know, you look at guys like Jackson Chourio, James Wood, Miguel Vargas, all studs take him after Manzardo. But, you know, we are talking about him. Manzardo's a stud. I'm happy to plant that flag at all. Anyway, I think my pick that I'm going to kind of nudge forward, even though, like I said, I love this team, I'm going to nudge him forward. It's Blaze Jordan at 119. And it's kind of friendly fire. And it's only because I waited too long to take Jake Eater. And that is my favorite pitching prospect. And that's saying a lot. I love pitching prospects, and Jake Eater just had Tommy John. I like Blaze. I had Blaze at 60th in my top 500 in September for Prospects Live. But I missed Eater because I didn't take the player I wanted. I had Eater at the top of the queue for two or three rounds. And again, just, you know, wow, there's better value here. There's better value here. I think Blaze comes here. And honestly, I remember thinking, like, man, Chris is going to snipe me on Eater. I know Chris likes Eater too. And then I'm going to feel real bad because then I'm going to have to talk about it on the podcast. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, Aurum Layton sniped us both. So it's
okay. Yeah, Aurum Layton. I don't know Aurum that well, but he has good taste in prospect pitchers.
He's very sharp. I think Aurum's the most underrated prospect mind in our community, to be honest. I think he's phenomenal.
I need to get to know him.
Yep. All right, Drew, we're going to wrap up with this last question. If I want to steal the draft, it can be anybody. We'll say not on your team, but one pick that was you thought was just a steal of the entire draft. And that's kind of a lot looking across the board. But if there's one pick you really love that you think would be a steal, what would it be?
I looked up and down and tried to. There were so many teams that I liked so much. And as a brief kind of thanks for you guys for having me on, I picked favorite picks of each of you real quick. Eric, I love Roger Arias at 208. I think Arias, if I could quote my buddy Juicy Jensen from the Prospect Live Snap, Arias could be a top 50 prospect had he played better in the DSL this year. He just didn't. So we're kind of going on what we expect. Either way, if we get 80% of that, Arias is a steal at 2. Love that pick. Chris, I couldn't choose between Ben Brown at 257. Love that arm. Great, great system he's coming from. And, you know, I like the Cubs and what they've done with acquiring pitching lately. But I think I'm going to go with Tyler Locklear at 276 for you, sir.
Love Lock.
Yeah, I'm with you there. He, I think, is kind of a bright spot after kind of your stud first baseman. Locklear looks like kind of what we were talking about with Guerrero a minute ago. The guy's going to kind of shoot up that ranking. I love that. But if I had to pick a favorite steal, I think it's got to be Matt Thompson taking Jackson Merrill at 53. That is potentially the best prospect in baseball as soon as, pause for dramatic effect, now, question mark. Depending on what metrics you like, Merrill is one of the most incredible players in all the minors. And if his AFL is to be believed, that those gains from the season are maintained. I think he made contacts 90% of the time, hard contact 80% of the time. And this is all stuff that I'm quoting from Tyrann Alexander, who is a legitimate genius again. That's the whole secret to my prospect success, by the way, is I surround myself on this Prospect Live staff of geniuses, and then I look smart. It's working really well. But yeah, Jackson Merrill, it seems like the industry is up on him, and I highly recommend anybody listening to this, for whatever it's worth, if you can get him in your leagues, do it, and you will not regret it.
Yeah, I think Merrill's going to be one of the biggest risers that we see probably over the next, I guess this offseason, he'll be one of the bigger ones.
Yep.
I think Locklear's going to be the steal of FYPDs. I mean, his metrics are just absolutely off the charts. We talk about like all this data. And I know, honestly, like I began to recognize Locklear from Mason McRae. And McRae has hyped him up for a while, since like 2020, I think. But you look and his metrics are just, they're better than Jacob Berry's. Like Jacob Berry's a top 10 guy. And it's just like, I understand he played at a smaller school, but like even against, I think there's been questions about how he was against better opponents, but against power five opponents, he was a 289, 413, 605 slash and 82% contact rate against power five opponents, 11% K, 107.4 90th mile an hour EV. And that's just against, that's against the better competition. So Locklear, hopefully if you're listening, you're not an FYPD with me because I plan to get him late. Because he's awesome. So, yeah. I appreciate the kind words, though, Drew. And thanks for joining us, man. It's always a pleasure. You're one of the most encouraging people in the community. You're so kind, and I always appreciate that. Just a genuinely good human being. And so we appreciate having you on the show, Drew. Thanks again, and thanks for participating.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for the kind words in return, and I hope you guys have an excellent rest of your evening. And everybody listening, enjoy the rest of the show.
Thanks. Anything you want to plug before you go?
Well, since you asked so nicely, I would love to plug the Prospects Live Patreon, where all of my work is. For $5 a month, you can get incredible tools that we're developing right there, including RoboScout, including our top 500, including a Dynasty top 1000 that's coming very soon, including an FYPD top 100 that's coming very soon. And if you're looking for things from me specifically, I have an article coming out about what I'm learning as I just made my top 500 for the first time and now doing mock drafts with you guys. And with Welsh and his crew doing my top 10s per team after the season, what I'm learning. But probably the thing that people would be most excited to know is that my kind of breakout piece, if I had to point a finger to it, was Seiya Suzuki last year. And so I am working on something about Masataka Yoshida, about Kodai Senga, about Shintaro Fujinami, and that will be up hopefully before the new year. We'll see.
So are you gonna, you know, are you cheating on Seiya Suzuki with Yoshida? Is he in there?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. Suzuki still has far superior power. I'd say probably 80% of the plate discipline and contact skill, more present speed. He's handsomer. I could go on and on about Suzuki. And if we have another 30 minutes, I'd love to. But I think you have other guests, right?
We do have other guests. But
wow.
Thanks for coming on, Drew. Everyone can follow him at Drew is okay. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Thanks. Bye, guys.
All right. That was Drew Wheeler. Definitely more than okay. But again, at Drew is okay on Twitter. We'll take another quick break. Come back with Matt Heckman to wrap us up. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back from the break. We have our final guest with us now. He writes at Fantrax HQ and will be writing at Pitcher List soon as well. Congrats on that. Mr. Matt Heckman joins us. Matt, how you doing, man?
Thanks, guys. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I'm excited to join the Dynasty team over at Pitcher List. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes. Nick said we had some freedom to, or had some freedom to potentially grab a few guys on the Dynasty team. So Matt's joining us and also Will Garofalo. That'll be a good one. And we've got some other guys that Nick's hired as well. So trying to get the Dynasty team really rolling and some good Dynasty content there. So
yeah,
I'm really excited about it.
All the merry, like I said, I love Dynasty content. I love reading others' content, see what other people think about it. I'm a junkie, you know. Obviously, I do all my content, writing, audio, you know, video and all that, but I'm just a junkie. I've always loved Dynasty. Definitely more room in the community for there's a lot of great people, a lot of very knowledgeable people. So happy to, you know, see you get your chance there too. And yeah, so it'd be a really fun 2023 of new people and new places and growing sites. So this would be a lot of fun. But let's hop right back into some mock talk here. Matt had the sixth pick in the draft. So right before Drew Wheeler, Matt's draft here, he started out first five picks for him. Anthony Volpe, Taj Bradley, Noelvi Marte, Austin Wells, and Brendan Thatt. 6 through 10, this pick I hate. I'm very mad at you for this pick still. As I was waiting, just letting this guy fall, I had him way, way higher in my rankings. I was getting too cute with it. Oh, let's see where he can fall to. And then I waited a little too long. But 6 through 10, my boy, Joey Weimer, Mick Abel, Wilmer Flores, Jonathan Classe, and Warming Burnabell. rounds 11 through 15. Owen White, Trey Sweeney, Wilkerman Gonzalez, Yasser Mercedes, and Ty Madden. And then 16 through 20, Logan Allen, Cade Povich, Jose Gerardo, Kay Doherty, and Matthew Liberatore. Maybe the fall of Liberatore to the last round after being a guy that probably would have been taken first four or five rounds a year and a half ago. But so very, I love, you had a great draft. And I said, you snaked me on a few guys. I love your, especially the way you started, Volpe, Bradley, Marte Wells. Love that. Obviously the Weimer pick too, and Mick Abel. I'm a big Mick Abel guy. But going into this draft here, did you have any type of strategy you were looking at? Was it best player available? Or are you trying to go off your rankings, maybe let some guys fall like I did with Weimer, but that backfired? But so what was your general strategy heading into this draft?
Yeah, so I have my rankings. I have my top 300, 400 rankings. So I was really just looking for the best player available based on my rankings, while also considering kind of how other people in the draft were drafting, which players were falling. I have Abel. I have Weimer. I have those guys way higher than where I took them. I have Logan Allen, who I took all the way down really, really late. I want to say it was like round 16. Yeah. I have him way higher in my ranking. So I had a feeling some of the guys were falling based on the draft. So I was just going in best player available while also trying to get some steals on some guys. If I thought the international high tool, high upside guys were starting to go, I kind of pushed them up my rankings a little bit. Kind of let some of the pitchers like Logan Allen, Cade Povich, guys I have a little bit higher fade, figuring I could get them later. I wanted to try and stay away from first-year player draft guys. I don't know. That was a strategy I was trying in this because it seemed like guys were pushing up a little bit just because they're flashy, they're new. It's always exciting to get a new guy who there's not a ton of data on, but you like the upside, you like his swing, you like his mechanics pitching. And so I think sometimes those kind of guys get pushed up a little bit more. And so I was trying to not reach for them, let them come to me if they did, and then just grab some of the values later on.
Yeah, the top of your draft feels a lot of like guys I would like. So I'm a fan of especially what you did at the top there. Brandon Pfaadt obviously is.
Love Pfaadt.
I think he's the most underrated pitching prospect in baseball. And he's going to be up with the team and pitching soon. I mean, it's not only the stuff that's really good. He's a 70% strike thrower, which is
command.
So
he's got great command of his pitch.
Yeah. I mean, he had his whiff rate on the slider and the changeup were both high 30s. Insane. I mean, he gets good right at the top of the zone with the fastball. It's deceptive. It's only like 93.5 average, but it plays up so much more. I think Pfaadt's really underrated. And, so, yeah, the first seven picks are all like people I would definitely be targeting for sure.
And Pfaadt, I just had this pop in my mind, someone that I think was very similar at this, the comparable stage of this person's career too, Shane Bieber.
I think it's a great
good command, can miss bats with multiple pitches. I'm not saying he's going to be Shane Bieber, but if everything clicks, and he reaches that high end ups, ceiling, I think it could be a very, very good pitcher for a very long time.
And you got to talk about Arizona's pitching development.
Oh, absolutely.
With Brent Strom there. I mean, this is a guy that developed these Astro pitchers that were so elite, and you got to love to see that. And what he did was in two of the most heavy hitting environments in baseball, and double and triple A, and then Reno and the PCL, like those are not pitching environments, and he dominated. I know you can look past the ERA, whatever.
Yeah, but right.
The rest of the stuff was just so good. So
that's where I think people look past him. They quick glance at his page. They see his ERA isn't sparkling in the minor leagues, and then they move on. And I think that's kind of why he gets pushed down, when that has no correlation to how you're going to perform in the big leagues. I feel like there have been numerous studies that doesn't show. Give me the K to walk ratio, and I will focus on that every day of the week.
Yeah, that's why stats aren't everything. Stats are, I'm not saying they're nothing, but there's a lot of other factors with prospects, and it goes a lot farther than just the box score. Metrics deeper down, the league factor, park factor within the league, and like for instance, like the California League, which is low A, was actually even more hitter friendly than the PCL. I think people realize that when they see like a young pitcher that might be struggling in the Cal League, or even a hitter might be going berserk in the Cal League. All right, there's almost 6 runs per team per game average in the Cal League. So yeah, there's a lot of those other factors that are just like, all right, you look at the season line, they don't always tell the full picture. And that is like exactly the case with Brendan Faught.
For sure. Yeah, so a lot of good names down the board. I mean, Trey Sweeney's drop was, I still value him higher. So like that, Owen White, Wickelman Gonzalez, saw him this year. Really like that. A lot. Jose Girardo is one I was hoping to get at the end of the draft. I think that's a massive upside play.
Yeah. Same here, yeah. He was like one of those like late round upside guys I had like kind of.
He was one of the guys I pushed up a little higher. As I started seeing the upside guys go, I was like, I want to get him.
Yeah, I mean, knowing that it was ending at pick 280, somewhere around there?
Yeah, 280.
So, yeah, it was worth pushing up a little bit. When you say it's that pushed up, knowing the draft is going to be ending soon, just get your guy. So I think that's a really good strategy to have there. Was there a favorite pick of these? You have a lot of good picks, a lot of picks we've talked about. Is there a favorite, like one favorite that you like the best among your team?
I love Wilmer Flores. You were talking about the top 7 rounds. I took Flores in the 8th round at 107. I think him and Faught are my two most underrated pitchers in baseball. The concern with him is he doesn't have a great third pitch yet, but his fastball and curveball are so elite right now for where he's at. I think he can develop a third pitch, and it doesn't even have to be a wipeout pitch. It doesn't even have to be an above average pitch. If he can just get a pitch that he can mix into hitters here and there to get him off his curveball, off his fastball. His numbers have been ridiculous in Detroit's system, and he's just kind of gone unnoticed. And the command on the fastball has gotten better. It touches, I think, 98. And then he pairs that with the curveball. He's borderline unhittable to righties with striking them out. I mean, in high A, in just the 19 innings, he had a K per 9 of 16.02. And then he got promoted to double A, and he followed that up with a 10.22. So like, he's been great, and I don't think he's talked about enough. So that was probably my favorite pick. I'm getting him in I'm in another prospect mock right now, and I took him around 104, I think, there too. I'm taking him everywhere. I love Wilmer Flores.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of good things, from people that have seen him live about Wilmer Flores. And I unfortunately missed him when they came here to Portland late in the season. I went the next day for Reese Olson, but I had a family birthday party for my little sister that was right at the same time. I was like, I couldn't, because it was a birthday party, 1 p.m. standard birthday party time. And of course, it was a Saturday afternoon game when he pitched. And I'm like, I couldn't have been a Saturday night game, so I could have made it. But I think he pitched pretty well. I think it was like, 5 1/3, 1 run, 8 Ks, something along those lines. But yeah, he's definitely a very underrated pitcher. I think I even myself am guilty of that. I think I don't have him as high as I probably should in my own personal rankings. So something I probably got to reassess here is, Chris and I are going through our, top 20 team by teams. And it really, it's a good way to kind of break it down and in ways that we don't usually do it during the season and see like, oh, wait, why do I have this guy this high or, this low? So I think I got to reassess where I am. Flores, he's a very talented arm. And if he gets that third pitch, consistently, he's going to be pretty good for Detroit.
Yeah, the other guy I liked was Noelvi Marte at 34.
That's good value, yeah.
He was ranked so high going into the year, and he struggled in the beginning. And like, I get it, you got to adjust your rankings, but I think the fall has just gone a little bit too far on that. I mean, since the start of June, he hit 297, 386, 509. He had 18 steals since then, double-digit walk rate, K rate under 20%. The numbers were good. And then the trade to Cincinnati, I feel like, should have just boosted his value even higher. Playing, if that's going to be his home park, his value should be even higher. So getting him down at 34 was something that I didn't expect to get. And sometimes I saw he was there and I ran that pick and they ran it to the podium if we were in a real draft.
Oh, absolutely. As you should have. Yeah. I think we've talked about it too on this show previously about how like the body is just so different now. Like, when he came in to where he is now, he's a lot bigger in a good way, not like overweight. Yeah. He's put on bulk. He's just trying to figure out how to best kind of use that. And he was a very awkward runner out in the AFL. I don't know how much speed he's going to provide. Maybe, I still think that maybe a 5-10 steal guy, maybe he's not going to be 20 plus, but still some speed. But I think that power has a chance to like be 30 plus, especially in Cincinnati now. Obviously, that's, one of the better hitter parks in all of baseball. So I think once he kind of figures out how to, all right, this is my build now. How do I best use it? I think he's still gonna be a very, very good bat, but maybe not as much speed, but I think it's gonna be a ton of power. So yeah, I'm still very high on Marte too. I think you got a good value there.
He's huge. Like he's so jacked.
He's I wouldn't want to meet Nolby Marte in a dark alley. Let's say that. kick my ass.
We were pretty close when he was in the batter's box a couple of times in Arizona and or in the on deck circle especially, and just I think he bulked up too fast and he's still having to adjust his swing a bit. Yeah. Like he's still trying to figure out how to swing the bat and get the swing speed back. I think his swing slowed down a bit, which is kind of like, you know, opposite what you think when you add strength, but it'll come back around. And so I think that this is a perfect time to buy low on Nolby Marte in dynasty leagues.
100% agree with that. All right, going to the other side of this now, though, after you saw how the draft kind of unfolded, were there any picks that you thought maybe I could have waited a little bit on that guy, or any picks of regret, so to speak?
I don't know about regret. I like Austin Wells a lot, so I don't think I really regret that pick. I got caught up in catchers were going fast, right?
Drew Wheeler for that.
every round he was taking a catcher, and I was like, well, I want to get one I like. I probably didn't need to take him in the fourth round, but I like him. I have him ranked top 35. I was talking to Chris last night a little bit. He's my top ranked catcher behind Alvarez. So I like Wells. I saw him play in Somerville. I think he's going to have real good pull power there in Yankee Stadium. If obviously he sticks in Yankee Stadium, he's going to really utilize that porchy patient at the plate, and he knows how to protect at the plate. I think I watched one of his at-bats in Somerville. He had like, it was like a 12 pitch at-bat. And then he finished it off with a home run, pulled over the wall. And it was impressive to see. And so I really like him, but I don't know if I needed to take him in the fourth round. I just felt pressured more so with all the catchers going. A little later, I probably could have waited on Ty Madden. I think he's a little underrated in Detroit system too. I'm not entirely sure why I didn't take him early, but I took him in the 15th round when maybe I took Logan Allen next and Cade Povich. So I took a lot of pitchers there. 4 and 5 rounds. So maybe I could have gone with a guy with a little more upside. Watson went that round. He's got upside. I don't know how much I believe in his upside anymore, but he's got it.
it was a good flyer though. Go for the upside. Yeah. If it doesn't work out, obviously it's a mock, so who cares? But yeah, still, I think it's still some upside with Watson. So I think let's see how he reacts in 2023.
Yeah, I mean, we flash back a year and Watson would have been going in round way higher than where he went now.
Wonder if I can pull up we did this last year too. Wonder if I can pull that up. I know the league's been deleted, but I wonder if I can find the results. So I bet you he probably went, top 50, right?
That's what I was going to guess. Probably, I was going to say top four say rounds.
Easily, yeah.
Yeah, so that was like I said, late, go for the upside. Obviously, he has the upside. We'll see if he can put it all together, but I love the Austin Wells, but I have him right around, I think 40, 41, 42, something like that. So love the power at Yankee Stadium, the approach. I think he's going to be very good. And there's so many good catchers right now. I have him, I think everyone goes to Alvarez a little bit. I love Endy. I actually have Endy as my C1 for catching prospects, but then Alvarez is right there. Wells is right there. And I'm a big Harry Ford guy, and there's obviously several others. I love so many catching prospects. I think Wells kind of gets underrated a little bit because some of the other ones, like the younger, flashier ones, are a year or two younger than Austin Wells. But that power in Yankee Stadium is going to be a problem. He could be 30 home runs, add a little bit of speed in too. He's athletic, not a ton, but add a little bit of speed, 5 to 8 steals, and I think solid enough average and a good OBP. So, I think he's going to be a very good fantasy asset.
Yeah. Another Yankee prospect Chris mentioned that I took was Trey Sweeney. He just looks like a ball player. I saw him play, and I know the stats aren't there right now, and he looks like it. He's got the swing. He's got the feel. He just, like, when I watched him play, I was like, this kid is God, and if he ever puts it all together. So I liked where I took him later.
Yeah, Sweeney's one where he was so underrated, I think, coming out of college to the draft just because it's a smaller school type thing. But in college, like, this was he so among all draftees in the 2021 draft, he was a 99th percentile contact rate, 99th percentile chase rate, 93rd percentile sweet spot, and 96th percentile max EV. Like, that stuff's insane. Like, I think it's really underrated how good he is and can be, but he just got to make a couple of adjustments. And I think he's going to be fine because there's a lot to like. I also saw him. I saw him the first series of the year, like when he was in Hudson Valley, they were down here in Greenville. So I only saw him three games, but even still, like you just watch him play. And I think he's a better bat than people have realized. So
yeah,
for those reasons, I'm buying pretty low on him in Dynasty right now and thinking that he can really bounce back strong next season.
I think he sticks at short too. I think he looked good at short. I know some people think he's going to move to third, but I think he'll stick at short.
Either way, I think he could have value wherever he plays. So he's enticing. I think the bat's going to play.
I do too. Just waiting for it.
Yeah. Agreed.
It'll come. I mean, sometimes it takes guys some adjustment time before they really figure it out and get going. So this will be, I think 2023 will be a telling year for him for sure.
I agree.
All right. As we wrap up here, Matt, is there a, looking at the whole draft board, is there any particular pick that you would say was like the steal of the draft that maybe wasn't on your team, or even maybe a couple that you just really liked that you felt like were really good values?
So Bobby Miller's, I like a lot of pitchers. I find myself liking more pitchers than hitters even at this point, which I don't know how to feel about that. But Bobby Miller in the sixth round at 77, I have him ranked in my top 30. The board was coming around, and that's where I took Weimer. I was between Weimer, Abel, and Bobby Miller coming because I saw all three were available, and then Bobby Miller went. So that made my decision a little bit easier. And then I ended up getting Abel on the wraparound the next round. But I really like Bobby Miller, and I think he's underrated. I think he's going to be in the big leagues next year with the Dodgers.
Yep.
The fastball isn't getting the strikeouts right now that it should, or it doesn't play as well as it should, but he's got the velocity for it. And I think I don't know what the tweak is, but I think working with the big league pitching staff can really unlock that sometimes for a pitcher. And he's already getting the strikeouts without it. And the command seems to be good. People are worried about it, but the walks aren't very high. And he's another one where the ERA isn't sparkling, and so I'm not sure if people are just overlooking him because of that, but I think he's got the stuff, and so I really like that pick. I think it was Jesse picked him sixth round at 77, so I really like Bobby Miller. That was one that really stuck out.
Yeah, he's one that's, I think, really talented, and the numbers don't really support what a good year he had. So yeah. I mean, him and Gavin Stone are both extremely intriguing. And you just got to be envious of the Dodgers player development, scouting, and the fact they can go buy any player they want. So,
it's so annoying. High payroll and loaded farm system.
I know. It's the gold standard. It's the best of both worlds. It's adding Tampa Bay in with like their development mixed in with like, you know, the George Steinbrenner Yankee spending. It's like they could spend all they want and they've all like still have one of the best farm systems in baseball. It's unfair. Usually you could have one or the other.
Yeah,
not both, and I hate that they have both because they're gonna be. That's why they've won. I think I looked at the since the beginning of, I want to say it was like 2019. It was like the last 4 or 5 years they had like 55 more wins than anybody else. I think next was like Houston Astros, and those like not even close. So they've averaged like over 100 wins per year, and then even like that year in 2020, I think people forget they went like I think 43-17. They were insane. On like 119 win pace or something like that. Who knows what they would have ended up at, obviously. But yeah, that's the gold standard. And that's why they have two picks from this, our, you know, steals of the draft. Someone else, was it, who said Gavin? Was that Drew that said Gavin Stone? Or was that Tuma that said Gavin Stone?
I think it was Tuma.
Okay, yeah. So we got out of the three steals of the draft in this episode here, two of them were Dodgers pitching prospects. One Stone, one Miller. So you got to like that if you're a Dodgers fan, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, just the fact that they've developed pitching. Like Walker Buehler, you look at, I know he was a first round pick. He's an ace. They've had Kershaw forever. They have Urias forever. They have Gonsolin pitching now, Dustin May. They have a history of doing this, so why not bet on it again? Like they develop them and then they perform for fantasy. So Bobby Miller was a great pick, I think.
Yeah, it's like, and you're not going to have like argue your ace, Walker Buehler, for the next season, and you still have one of the best. How can you lose a guy like Walker Buehler and still have arguably like a top, at least I'd say top five rotation in baseball? It's an embarrassment of riches. I'm over here to like, hoping that James Paxton doesn't die and that Chris Sale can actually do something. And maybe we sign somebody and they're over here like, ooh, you know, our number five is Tony Gonsolin. I'm like, come on, die. I'm like annoyed. Like Houston, nice. Houston can't fit in Hunter Brown. I'm like, oh, it must be nice. You know, I'm rolling with rotting corpses of James Paxton. You guys got Hunter Brown and Tony Gonsolin.
That's a little bit how I feel, Phillies fans, with the Braves. Every guy they call up is like rookie Spencer Strider and Michael Harris and Vaughn Grissom. And I'm like, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of seeing all these guys come
up. Yeah, so we can share in that pain.
Yeah, the Braves never have elite prospects, but it's just like these dudes just come up and are solid major leaguers.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, neither does Houston. Like we talked about earlier, like they've had some elite guys, but even like Yordan wasn't like a quote-unquote elite guy to like the very end for he had that big year. But he would like, you know, before that big breakout the year he got called up, he wasn't like a super blue chip guy. They got him for free from the Dodgers. Imagine the Dodgers didn't give away Yordan Alvarez and whatever that deal was. I forget who they got, some guy that isn't around anymore. But if they held on to Yordan Alvarez, that would have been insane. But
yeah. And then I'll give you guys my favorite pick from each of your teams since I'm on. Spencer right. Jones for Chris. I really like it. Another one. Yankee Stadium. I mean, he's flying upwards because I wanted to take him. And I kind of thought Chris was going to take him before I ever got the chance, knowing how much Chris loves him. But I really like Spencer Jones. And then Kevin Alcantara for our Eric. I like that pick.
I love the Jones pick for Chris too. Obviously, Jones, that profile at Yankee Stadium is very nice. And yeah, Kevin Alcantara, I took some fielder, but they kept following to me, all the guys that I really liked. So it wasn't like my plan, but yeah, I don't think people realize how good the talent is there. And he's still a bit raw. He's still got, you know, a little rough around the edges. Got some stuff to work on, obviously, but the talent there and good potential park with Wrigley Field. And I think that lineup they keep adding. I think they're building up to the next like good Cubs team. And yeah, I think it's gonna be a good lineup, good park, good power speed line, a lot of stuff to like there with him. So yeah, that was one of my favorite picks too, personally.
How high do you think Spencer Jones is going to go in FYPDs?
I think you could see him as high as like, I think the top four are there. And then you'll probably see Senga go up there, but I think after that he's in play. I think he's right
top 10 easily.
Yeah, I think he's right in that tier with Collier, with Cross, with Parada. You know, with I put the louder in that tier. And I know some people don't, but he's right. I think he's right in that tier with a lot of those college bats. So right, like kind of tier two, so to speak. But I could see him go as high as maybe five. I don't think he'll break top four, but anywhere from five on, I think he's definitely in play. And if I have a pick in that range, I'm going to be very tempted to take him because that profile, again, very, very intriguing stadium.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. There's just that big tier. Like, I think you have your top four, and then after that, there's a kind of a tier. I like Cam Collier at five,
but
you can go a lot of different directions. So,
yeah,
I think the sweet spot's going to be like that eight or nine range. If you can get Spencer Jones and then come back in the second and get a solid player too.
And like see who falls from that tier, like who's left.
Somebody will.
Maybe I wouldn't be surprised if Collier fell. I won't be any of them really. I won't be surprised. Or if you want to get Senga there, he might be there. If you want to win now, I think getting like the back end top 10 would be very intriguing. Then you can get a guy in the teens, you know, 17, 18 range, whatever. Yeah, this would be a fun spot to be in FYPDs.
Yeah, I kind of either want to be at like 2 or 3 or 9 or 10. There's like no in between. Like at you can get whichever guy falls, but like Jones is going to be number one. Then 3, you can take Holiday or Green or Tamar, I guess, like either any one of those. So maybe even 4.
I don't want to be 5. Let's put it that way. I don't want to be like 5-6 because I don't want to have to like make that decision. I want it made for me. Like somebody take all the other guys and I'll take the Jones or the Collier or Gavin Cross, whoever's still there. So yeah, I think this would be a fun spot to be in. It's going to be a fun FYPD. I think this is a very, very good class, especially with those bats at the top. So. Well, that's going to wrap us up. Matt, thanks for joining us. I'll give you a second here to plug all the good stuff you're doing.
Yeah, well, as we mentioned earlier, I'm joining Pitcherlet, so I'm still writing for Fantrax, doing some articles. I'm working right now, trying to shift over toward league-specific articles. So I'm doing one, trying to find values for starting pitchers in points leagues. And then I've started to work on some research for how to attack bullpens and saves and holds leagues, some guys to target, what to do in drafts. I'll keep working on my XWRC+. And then getting into the dynasty stuff over at Pitcherless with Chris, working on some articles, some player write-ups, some rankings, things like that. Excited to get my feet really wet in that and get going.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Matt, very knowledgeable, good guy. Obviously, we have him here at Fantrax. He'll be at Pitcherless with Chris as well. So definitely give him a follow. You can follow him on Twitter at @Heck_Matt115. Again, Matt, thanks for coming on. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matt. Absolutely. Have a good night.
Bye.
All right. That's going to wrap us up for this episode. This was a lot of fun, a lot of good talking here, strategy and player picks. And guess what? We're going to have part two of this episode. Absolutely. We get 4, 5, maybe 6. It's going to be a loaded episode. Another mock draft recap from this coming out next Monday. So tune in for that. We'll be recording that this weekend. Can't wait for that, too. But that is going to wrap us up. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. You can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. And, of course, check out our Patreon and our YouTube as well. And join us again next time for more Fantasy Baseball Talk. But until then, everyone take care.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.